for such a time as this, bitch. Like, I was made for this, you know?
That's a, I'd like you to entertain that as a possible album name for your next work.
For such a time as this, bitch.
Such a time as this, bitch.
Welcome to Holy Ghosting. I'm Meg, and I'm joined by Sarai, and Lindsay is not with us today, but our special guest today, where we get to have an amazing conversation, is Flamie Grant, musical artist, the comedy queen with a blistering voice, today on Holy Ghosting. Hi, Flamie.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thank y'all for having me.
Excellent glasses. I love your glasses so much.
Thank you. You know, a little cat eye. If I can't paint it on, I can at least frame my eyes, you know, that's when I'm out of drag.
Literally what I do every day.
We're so thankful that you could come on today because this is our last episode for Pride. It's been a really great month. I've learned a lot personally, which is not the point, but I really do. I really do love that. I've learned a lot about myself as well this month. And I think that that is something that I want every listener to take away. So I'm really excited because today I want to focus on the joy of life and the life we're living and the life that we get to have now and in the future. We talk a lot about where we've been, experiences that we've had in the past and where we've come from. And a lot of those conversations are really hard. They're tough to have. And they're important to have, though. But we've done that a lot. And so today, I really just want to talk about life and the things that you have found where you have found your joys. I'd love to start with when you found drag and how that kind of changed who you are and helped you discover who you are today.
I can't remember the first drag show I saw. I think it was with my brother, my younger brother in Asheville, North Carolina, in our hometown, maybe a decade ago or so. So I'm 41. So that means I was in probably my early 30s when I first went to a drag show. And, you know, we don't, on this podcast, I don't think we need to go into the details of why. We're all late bloomers when you grow up evangelical or super, you know, in a high demand religion. You're a late bloomer by default.
Well, I like to say we get two teenage years, like two, like,
yeah,
you know, coming of ages or so, you know, where we get to like discover as an adult without all the people telling us no. We get to be like, wait, I get to decide? It's my life now? Wow. And this whole world that we didn't get to know existed exists out here.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you got to just like go somewhere you never would have gone before. And you started to think thoughts you never thought before.
Yeah. almost never thought before, because as it turns out, and I knew this, we had photos of me in our family photo books of me as a little thing in my, you know, stomping around in my mom's heels. And I remember getting in trouble for ruining a tube of her lipstick one time. So like those memories kind of came back as I started like experiencing and exploring the world of drag. So I like to remind myself that those impulses were there, you know, from the get-go. Like those instincts were, if not inborn, you know, I discovered them at the earliest possible age, right? And of course, you know, ended up bottling them away and shoving them deep down for a good three decades.
just standard fare for growing up, you know.
Yeah, just
in the church.
Just a nice little bit of compartmentalization there for you. Decades long compartmentalization. And I, yeah, so it was slow. My engagement with drag was slow. I went to a couple drag shows and I was like, okay, that's neat, cool. And then the time I remember kind of like having the stars in my eyes was here in San Diego, where I live now. And we went to a trivia. I think it was a Harry Potter trivia hosted by a drag queen. And I just like was distracted from the trivia the whole time because I was just kind of watching her and like, this is so gorgeous. It's amazing. Like, and the way she interacted with the audience and just all of it being a performance, but also like, you know, you can tell an extension of who she was. And I was just fascinated by it. So after that, I kind of started getting into Drag Race, RuPaul's Drag Race. And it was a good 11 seasons in by this point. So I binged all of those seasons.
Nice.
And, you know, have been a complete Drag Race stan ever since. but it was while we were watching Drag Race one night, my husband and I, I turned to him and I was like, what, do you have a drag name? Like, what would your drag name be? And he was like, of course I do. I'm gay. It's like my drag name would be, my drag name would be Amanda Do It. And
I love it.
I was like, yeah, right. He just had that at the ready. And I was like, well, I don't have a drag name. Like, what? I need one. And so we brainstormed a bit. And I love the ones that are puns, like Tina Burner or Shaka Convict or, you know, that kind of thing. You know, puns off of a diva's name and a pre-existing diva. And it's like, well, it just kind of came from there. I was like, my diva growing up was Amy, obviously. And I said the words Flamey Grant to him and he laughed. And I was like, because Chris, my husband has he does not understand religious trauma. He has no religious oppression in his background.
Oh, so, that's so amazing. Gosh, yeah, do you soak up that energy sometimes?
I try. we also spend a lot of time like interpreting for each other.
Yes, because you're like, oh, okay, hold on, let me back up.
Yeah, let me give you 8 years of context. But yeah, I was like, if he's laughing at this name, then I know there's like a whole generation of, you know, youth group kids who are gonna love it. And I was right, because that's the first comment I usually get. Well, I get one of two comments. I get, I don't understand the reference, from Gen Z, or I get you know, from people my age, and some younger people who grew up in the church, obviously, they're just like, that's the best stage name ever.
I think we just are going to help Amy continue her crossover journey and, you know, help more people know who she is in the next generation. I think that's fine.
Heck yeah. I think people should know who Amy Grant is. She's got an incredibly storied career, 4 decades of music. I mean, she was just honored for Kennedy Center Honors. She has an honorary doctorate now from, I think, some Pennsylvania university. Like her stuff is still like happening for her all the time right now. She's been in the news a lot lately for her support of the LGBTQ plus community. She had her lesbian niece's wedding on the family farm, took a lot of flack for it, took no stranger to flack, obviously, but she always handles it so well and so gracefully. And then this time, she said, fuck you, with the most Christian grace imaginable. You know, she said, I love those girls. They're part of my family and I'm going to support them, which is about as a fuck you as you're going to get from Amy Grant. And I just love it. So, yes, if you don't know who Amy Grant is, kiddos, hop on your favorite streaming app and listen to Behind the Eyes. Start there. It's a really great album.
Nice.
I will say I'm a quarantine queen. So like I was interested for several years, but had only gone out and drag a couple times for parties and Halloween and that kind of thing. And then the pandemic hit and I just, like all of us, had time to spare suddenly that I had never had in my adult life. And rather than getting a sourdough starter or, you know, starting a garden, I bought makeup and started watching YouTube videos. So I learned to do my drag during quarantine via live streaming and little cover concerts we would do with our housemates who are also musicians. And in some ways it's great. And in some ways it's a little embarrassing because you can go back and still watch all of those early house concerts.
Yeah.
Where the drag is developing. So
it's the journey. It's part of the story. It is the journey. Right?
I personally love it. I love that I get to kind of have that record to go back to and be like, oh, you're so cute. Look what you were trying to do. Yeah, bless her heart. Exactly.
I love that. Just that little moment I wanna like cling to for 1 second of that experience of looking at things that you might want, like your initial response might be like, oh my gosh, that's so embarrassing. But the ability to also go back and see yourself as just so precious and adorable is such an important and beautiful skill that we also really didn't learn growing up. And so I have found that kind of thing. This is just a hot tip for listeners to really help me and my own ability to see and understand myself, not really having to do with drag necessarily, though it could.
Yeah,
we're all just precious.
I think that's a really hot tip. I think you're absolutely right, because I mean, what it is inner child work, and inner child work doesn't have to stop when we, you know, turn 18. Like, we can do inner midlife work and inner, you know, like inner last week work, you know, like we can always talk to past versions of ourselves and give them more context than we had at the time, you know. And I think that's so helpful and important in our journey and our growth, to be able to say to ourselves, you did your best, you actually did your best. And maybe you classified it as a fuck up at the time, or and I'm sorry, are we good with words?
It's required.
We have to check the explicit box. So if you don't do it, it's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, that's so embarrassing. Okay, so maybe we classified it as a fuck up at the time, but and maybe it was. Maybe we still classify it as a fuck up, but it was a fuck up that we made for XYZ reasons, you know. And now we know those reasons, and we can be better and do better. And also, maybe it wasn't a fuck up at all, and maybe it wasn't your fault at all. And that's what we have to learn a lot of times too.
Oh yeah, gosh. I love giving my little younger self like a little bit of a pep talk and taking back some of that. Like, if I didn't hear that from an adult when I was a kid, I can hear it from an adult now because I'm 43. So I get to claim adulthood at this point. So it's like, let's help that younger self. Like we were talking about earlier, this kind of like reclaiming of different times in our life, whether it's when you were four and you put your mom's shoes on and dress, and if you had heard a different response, or if you had been in an environment that did not shame that moment or stop that evolution. You know, we had a conversation with Dr. Laura Anderson. She talks about, we had this on-off switch when we went through puberty, and when we had natural things happening when we were little kids, like exploring what gender fluidity might look like, those things were halted. They were stopped. And so we just had to turn all that off. And now kind of being able to, as an adult, kind of go back to those moments and say, okay, when was that? So I love that you have photos and that you can go back and look at yourself at all of these different stages, and you can see the wonder in that little kid's eyes, and you can go, hey, guess what you get to do? You get to become Flamey Grant when you're my age, you know, and telling your younger self all about who you are now is, God, that's a gift to give everyone, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. The wonder, re-engaging the wonder, I think is such a, it's a whole thing.
I love
that. We could spend an hour talking about that.
Yeah. And how do you then project that into the future that you want? Like, actually being able to go back and embrace those beautiful moments in our younger selves really is a gift to future us. So what are the things that you do that ensure a joyful future, ensure your future is one of the goodness that you want?
I walk around just in my integrity, right? Like, I hold myself, I esteem myself, you know? And that's a thing that's so shamed out of us. You use that word shame, and I think that's the perfect word. Shame is created around key moments in our lives growing up. And, you know, one of those ways that we are shamed frequently in the church is, you know, the idea of pride going before a fall, and just being too proud, being a proud person. And obviously we're here in Pride Month, so let's talk about pride.
Yeah.
I'm fucking marvelous. Okay. Like, just as a human, as a human creation, like as a body and a brain in this world, we all are. And I have my own unique marvel that I bring to the world. And that is never something that should be shamed. It's never something that should be, that we should be asked to tone down or turn down, or, you're too much, you know, all of these messages that we get, growing up, and not just in the church. People get that message obviously everywhere. And I think holding yourself in some level of esteem is a really healthy practice, and not something we should be ashamed to do. It changes how you interact with people. Mm-hmm. It changes what you put into the world, like what the work you do. If you're walking around believing that you are a fallen sinner and that the only reason you have any value at all is because, you know, you're seen through the lens of Jesus, like, thank goodness Jesus is there, because otherwise God can't stand you, right? Like, God can't even look at you, and you can't look at God or your face will melt off. Like,
we've all seen the covenant or the Lost Ark. Wait,
yeah, exactly.
Never mind. Forget
the Raiders. Yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark. But yeah, when you walk around with that as your foundational understanding of yourself, like, you're going to be very apologetic for everything you do. You're going to, it also, the other thing it does is it turns you into, like, weirdly, ironically almost, it turns you into this, like, just hoard of judgment for other people too, because you're constantly judging yourself.
And it just
take all that and you turn it outward and you look at other people and say, well, you're a sinner too. And like, at least I'm not as bad as you, or like we categorize ourselves. Yeah. Based on our level of proximity to like how much Jesus do you have in your life, kind of thing. And man, if you walk around and just believe that you are inherently good and that you have the tools that you need to figure it out and that you have something to offer the world that is marvelous, you're just going to be a happier person, and you're going to focus less on what other people think about you. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to spend all your time thinking about other people. And not in the way that, not in a judgmental way, right? Like, you might actually spend more time thinking about people in a way that is positive and helpful. And you might look at people with more compassion, and you might do things, therefore, with your life that help people become their authentic self and their most whole version of themselves, instead of just like being caught in a cycle of judgment and shame and avoiding authenticity and all of the things that, you know, have gotten so many of us to gross places in our world today.
Yeah, for sure. I love to hear from you, Slaney, about how you define queer joy. Like, that's sort of what we are really interested in tapping into today. And for some of our listeners, that might not even be a concept that they've considered or thought mattered or something like that. So I'm kind of curious how you would describe that, and how does that show up for you in your life?
One of the things I think queer people get a lot, one of the comments we get a lot is, why do you have to make everything about being gay? And for a long time, I, lived in that shame. That was another point of shame as well. And I lived in that too, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm not, that's not all I am. I'm not just gay. It might be a little facet of my life, but I'm all these other things. And like many other queer people, I have now moved into a place of just fully embracing that, yeah, everything in my life is gay because I'm gay. Like, that's just this is a gay conversation, and this is a gay hoodie I'm wearing, and my glasses are so gay right now. And I think that that's just kind of a natural pendulum swing from living the bulk of our lives where everything was straight, right? And it's hard to get that concept across to a lot of people. But straight culture, like, does the exact same thing. Everything is straight. Right. Like, all of that's the true. Advertising, all of the imagery that you see, the entire foundation of society and family structure, like, it's all like, it's
the Bachelor
the Empire. Exactly. Like
every Kardashian is straight. I don't know what to say. Like, guys,
how is that, by the way? How is every Kardashian straight? That doesn't make, that makes no sense.
I feel like we're waiting on, I'm waiting on like the teenagers, like the next generation. Are all of y'all gonna finally just be like, gender is a construct?
Yeah, I hope so.
What's ours? You are the best, and we love you so. Please rate and review our show.
It's just a natural reaction to, I think, to having lived your entire life in a world that was so dominated by heteronormativity, that it actually does, it actually is a joyful thing to like let your, you know, let your voice, to not modulate your voice, to not code switch the way you speak, to use language that is common, a common language among queer people that straight people might be like, what does that mean? You know, it's like, these are moments of joy to just simply amplify and make everything gay. Like, it's just, we've just had enough. Like, and I think there's nothing wrong with spending the second half of your life as gay as hell, to make up for the fact that you spent your first half trying to be straight as hell, or straight as heaven. I don't know, whatever.
Straight as heaven, the straight and narrow.
Just be gay as hell. You don't have to be straight as heaven.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, queer joy for me is, and pride in general, is just celebrating all the things that you once felt shame around. That's really, it really just boils down to that.
And is there safety in that environment? Is there a, like, the ability to completely unmask and to completely be who you are? That's something I'm still, I mean, I don't know who I am in so many ways, because I'm just asking now. I'm just starting to ask myself. And so I find a lot of kind of safety in a community of people who just says, come as you are, truly come as you are, remain as you are, be who you are, be in a community of people who will just allow you to even figure out who you are, because we know that you've been keeping maybe who you are at a distance. And so it just, to me, that feeling that I used to feel walking into a church of my community and the safety, because it was insular, you know, I, like, there was no cussing at church. Like, I didn't like cussing. Right. And then there were all these rules that I could follow being at the church.
Yeah.
It was like, that felt quote unquote safe to me.
Yeah.
So realizing now, I think what you're kind of saying is that queer joy is just parentheses queer joy. It's really just living your life in the way where you don't have to hide any aspect of who you are. And if other people want to make it about sexuality and they want to hypersexualize your life, I anticipate that your marriage is a lot like my hetero marriage, which is just two people figuring out life together and partnering and also disagreeing and, you know, it because you're just two people.
Yeah.
And I think if we could maybe stop hypersexualizing, I don't know, everyone, like, we don't need to ask little girls if they have boyfriends when they're in kindergarten. We just don't need to. We don't have to present a hypersexual world to any people, but I would like to present a world where sexual things and sexuality are not shameful, and where they are, you are free and open to explore and understand who you are as a person. And I hope my kid can do it. You know, my kid's 13 right now. I'm like, oh man, you don't have this purity culture oppression and you can just live life, like figuring out who you are, who you like. That's, oh, I'm excited to watch that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish that, you know, you talk about the safety that we used to feel going to church. Right. And like, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I'll also put the little caveat on it, which was, for me, at least my experience was, yes, like that was the safest place, right? That was my place. Like I felt, I don't know, not just belonging, but ownership of it too, right? Like I'm helping make this thing happen. The caveat to that was that I was hyper aware at all times that my belonging depended on a set of criteria that I had to meet, right? So
yes,
so safe, but also at risk, especially for me personally, knowing as I developed and learned that I was queer, that risk just ever grew in my mind, you know. So not exactly safe, but something like that. And I wish that people who, you know, are in churches and looking at the drag bands and looking at drag shows and prides and, you know, getting that hypersexualized perspective on it, because that's what gets portrayed in key moments of media coverage and that kind of thing. I wish we could like transplant that experience for them and say like, that's what, when you pass this legislation and when you, you know, try to take away our safe spaces, like, how would you feel if that was happening to American churches, right? Like, how would you feel if churches were under actual attack?
A lot of people persecution. Say,
oh, yeah, exactly. Where the government was coming in and saying, yes, no, like, your church can't do X, Y, Z, or what, like, that kind of stuff.
They already think that's happening so much of the time. Yeah. No, but you're right.
Like, yeah. That's, you're actually, like, taking something away from people where, like, we've carefully cultivated these spaces. Like, there's a reason gay bars exist, like there's a reason that, you know, all 40,000 Protestant denominations exist. Like,
yeah,
we all need that space that we can go to where, because queer joy looks different in at a drag show than it does in the public square. And at a drag show, the difference is I don't have to be an activist. I don't have to advocate for myself in any way. I just, it's exactly what you were describing, Meg, about just being who you are and fully inhabiting and embodying every little gay inclination you might have. Whereas when I express and exude queer joy in the public square, it's a political statement by default because of where we're at as a country and just as a society. And there's a threat at any time when I express my queer joy that I'm going to get a comment, you know, on social media, or someone's even going to come up to me in person and have an issue with, you know, there's kids here. Like, yeah. And I'm glad your kid's seeing a little bit of queer joy, because you don't know your kid's identity yet. So having queer joy in queer spaces is a true unburdening and relief for people to just truly be themselves.
I really appreciate the point that you just made also about not having to advocate, not having to be political, even like in those spaces necessarily, because you're able to just say, okay, this is where I belong. I get to be here. That sense of just like peace and comfort and chillness is a huge relief, because it is, you know, as Meg was mentioning, like, yes, people will hypersexualize everything. And also sexuality is a really important and beautiful part of our human lives. And absolutely. And like you were saying, I've only recently like started talking about this more, but I've known I'm queer for a really long time, but I also had the same kind of like, okay, but like, yeah, who that's not the most important or most interesting thing about me. Like, do I need that to be a central part of my identity or not? And, you know, I haven't been a part of the church for a really long time. So like, that's not part of any hangups around it. But I think that the sense of, I do still inhabit some dual worlds, you know, with my family, my parents in particular. It's fine, but I also don't feel like I need to be ashamed about who I am or who I love or in what configuration that happens. I think it is something that is easy to take for granted for somebody like me, where I am pansexual. I've also been in a lot of heterosexual relationships with cisgendered men, like almost exclusively. And so, so there's, I don't know. I really appreciate you bringing up that point about it not having to be like about something that upsets other people, but instead just saying, this is who I am and I get to be free, because freedom is mine. I don't have to conform to someone else's expectation.
Yeah. We're so ready to take offense at any time we perceive, like, so I made a video, my first single off my record. I made a music video for, and we kind of like set up a church service and portrayed it to be a really like almost a MAGA church, right? Like the preacher's talking about how they're coming and they're gonna, you know, they want to take over our spaces, that kind of thing. They want to groom your children, blah blah blah. And then three drag queens walk in and do that, you know, like turn the place on its head and throw a big gay party. And by the end of it, all the entire congregation has like taken off their boring brown duds and they've got rainbow shit underneath. And it's, and you know, I knew the response that was going to get from certain people, and that's partly why I did it. I am an Enneagram 8. I do enjoy a little bit of a conflict now and then. And but at the same time, like, I've had to actually have conversations with people where I'm like, you understand that what I made is a piece of art, right? And that it's metaphorical and not literal. And like, drag queens,
this wasn't a real church.
Yeah, like this hasn't, this has never happened in the history of any church where a drag queen has come in and forcibly like taken over the service. And like there's a point that's being made here that's an artistic point. And so it's wild to have to like have those conversations with people as an artist. but at the same time, not that I condone it, but I understand a little bit of that because of what we were talking about, that sense of ownership and belonging, right? Like when people show up at drag bars with signs and protests and things like that, like,
yeah,
I'm quick to take offense at that because you actually don't have any ownership in this space. Like, we've worked really hard to cultivate it, and you actually don't understand what's going on in these doors, and you're just coming, you are almost invading our space with your signs and your message. So like that actually is happening to our community and not to churches. And actually maybe to a degree now it is happening in churches because of people like me who are making videos like this and sending messages like this. But our message is that you already have queer people in your midst. Okay.
Yeah.
You we're already there. We're growing up with you. We are part of these churches already. Yeah. Whether you like it or not, like that's just, we're there. And how you are responding to our presence or not responding to our presence, you know, ignoring us, like kicking us out as soon as we come out, that kind of thing, you know, says a lot about what's actually happened. Like, it's actually not belonging that you are espousing here at all. Like, you're not about belonging, you're about fitting in, you're about,
that's right,
conformity. So it's just, it's interesting to have a foot in both both of those worlds still, and kind of trying to walk that line. And sometimes, you know, it's funny. I was at a standard regular run of the mill drag show where I was performing, and the host introduced me and said, she's the first queen to ever record a full length Christian album as a drag queen. And it was just crickets in the room. I was like, please don't introduce me that way to
yeah, seriously.
A drag audience. Like that's, you know, that's so heavily laden with no context. And it doesn't, doesn't translate in that room. And then, you know, I go into a church, and even progressive churches, a lot of them have never had a drag queen, you know, as part of their service or whatever. And it's real fun when I get invited to a progressive church service, the care with which they are taking to figure out what I do and how I'm going to interact with their congregation. And like, it's just fun. It's cute. It's adorable to watch.
Aww, Amy, for so those sweet. For those people who have not been able to see you perform, can you give us a little sneak peek into what it's like to see you in person or to go see Godless Sheathen?
I do a lot of things, right? Like I'm a musician. I have a record that a lot of the songs are actually songs that, not a lot, but a couple of the songs on the record are actually songs I wrote for my last church, which was a very progressive church. And then I kind of co-opted for my drag persona. So there's some like really wholesome content out there that I do. And then I'm also a drag queen, and I love gender fuckery. I love what drag does with subverting norms. And I mean, that's part of why I do it. And to explore my own fluidity and my own gender expression and things like this. So there's also some things that are not what most folks would consider wholesome, right? And it's weird I always have to assess like what's the space I'm going into, who am I performing for, that kind of thing. And so if you come to Godless Sheathen, which is my one woman cabaret show, I mean, I wouldn't call it bawdy. I'm not like making a whole bunch of sex jokes for no reason. It is for mature audiences. And, you know, we're talking about, I mean, it's a lot of comedy and there is some shock value to it, I think. Intentional shock value, you know, that's meant to shake things up a little bit. But if you see me at a church, in a church service, this weekend is a great example. I'm going up to the Bay Area and I'm doing my cabaret show in San Jose twice, and then I'm going into the city and on Sunday I'm doing a drag Eucharist, which my friend John Brett with the San Francisco Night Ministry puts on. And I'm not entirely sure what it is yet. I just know that I'm bringing some songs, and I know that we are offering communion, and I'm using air quotes for the listeners, to people on the street, but it's rather than like bread and wine, it's like a blessing or like a cleansing of an aura or something. I don't have all the information, but it's like a...
Wow, sounds amazing.
Yeah, I can't wait to witness it and figure out what exactly I'm participating
in. I hope you post some like videos or something on your Insta or on TikTok, because I want to see what happens.
I for sure will. And then I'm also doing a family Bible hour at a church in the city, a progressive church. So it's like I honestly don't even fully know what that's going to look like either, but I know I'll be in front of kids and we'll be talking about the Bible and singing songs about the Bible. And then I'm doing a concert the next night. That's just like more my folk music in drag. And so it's just like, boom, in one weekend, I've got three very different expressions of, of what I'm doing. So you can kind
that's of, really great.
Yeah. You just have to figure out, from context clues, like what's the venue you're going to see me at, who's the audience that you're seeing me with, to know what you're going to get. It could be wildly different depending on those things.
I love that. Sounds like you have a blast everywhere you go. Are there things that you want to share with us that are going to be happening after when this episode comes out? I'd love for people to be able to see you and know where they can find you if they can see you live.
If you're in SoCal, if you're in San Diego, I'll be performing at SheFest, which is a precursor to San Diego's Pride, on Saturday, July 8th. it's basically lesbian pride, like she fest, you know, so it's woman pride, or woman identifying pride. And so I'll be performing there. I don't really have any other gigs happening in July, but in August, I have a couple final things that I'll be doing in San Diego, last hurrah sorts of things. So you can just check my calendar for that. And then
and people can go to flamygrant.com to check out where you're performing, to find all your links to all your social channels. And we will also link to that in the show notes.
Oh, thank you. Yes. And then from once we hit North Carolina, it's, you know, I'm hitting the ground running. I'm quitting the day job for the first time and trying to make a go of this. So I've already got a lot of things booked in Asheville, just in the Southeast. I've got some things that are in the works. So, you know, stay in touch if you're on the East Coast. And also if you have any kind of venue or, you know, progressive church, whatever, and you're looking to book, I'm open. I'm available. Hit me up, baby.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Flamy Grant. And please go check her out on all social channels. Wherever you are, she is there. And if you're on the East Coast or somewhere in the South, look out because she is coming to a stage near you.
Thank you all so much for having me.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
I'm just grateful to be here. I appreciate it so much. Thanks.
Good. Well, we'll see you on the internet. I always like to say that. And we hope to see you on Drag Race.
One of these days.
I'm so excited to just watch where you go and all the people that you infect with your joy. And I really, truly hope that one day we get to share a stage together, because our goal is to just never stop, never stop, because we just, there's so many us's and you's and them's and all of us's out here that just are like craving community and to find our place again, because we did, we like had to walk away. We had to just say goodbye.
Yeah. It's hard. And that's the biggest, most powerful thing that they have in their arsenal is you're going to lose your community. And that is it's a hard thing. And you do lose that community.
And family. There's a lot of people who lose
and
family.
Yeah. They don't tell you that, you know, on the other side, you actually won't wind up in the gutter. Like, you will be okay. Like, there are people who will hold you and everything, but it's a big deterrent. And yeah, I'm sure you guys get it too, but all the people who privately agree but won't publicly, you know, they're like,
oh God,
I love what you're doing. Like, wish I could. I'm like, you actually could. It's just, you just have to be willing to do the work like I did.
But I think that pride is also, for me, it was kind of this revelation of like, it's a way for people who are living stealth or quiet that they know that a community exists because of pride now. They get to actually see that there are people living life and just living normal, also boring, like sometimes challenging, hard lives, but they're just living their freedom, like in freedom and not having to hide. And I'm working on that in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
personally. Absolutely. So thank you for being someone who is kind of shining a light on that path that goes a different way and kind of comes out of that little dark, tiny constraint place that we all lived in that we thought, well, I thought was really safe because it was really easy to understand the rules. Turns out it's not. The rules are always changing and they're always trying to control you in different ways. So
yeah,
surprise, we can stop doing all that work. And we can actually be able to just breathe and live. And thank you for showing that.
My God. It's a pleasure and partly a duty, like you feel an obligation to that next generation, but also at the same time, it's like, if I'm going to be gay as fuck, then, you know, might as well do it in a way that's going to hopefully shine that light and bring some joy to people.
Oh, hi, ghosties. It's me, Sarai, Meg, and Lindsay. OMG. Hi.
Oh, wow. We're all together.
It's so exciting. We want to thank you all for joining us for Pride this month. We've had a great time talking with so many awesome people and hearing so many of your stories and beyond. So thank you for being with us along the ride. we were so thrilled to be able to offer episodes every single week, and we kind of thought it was cool. So if you want to help us do that more, we would love to release weekly content, be able to tell more stories and ask more questions and hearing from more people. So if you want to help us out, you can join us for $5 a month over at patreon.com/holyghosting.
If you want to be a patron for more than $5 a month, you can also do that for the same exact rewards, because we believe in egalitarianism.
It's true. And we put a lot of fun behind the scenes content there. And we will be releasing full Patreon only episodes in the nearest future.
Woohoo!
Which brings me to the summer of Holy Ghosting. So we are taking July off of recording, but we will be releasing some bonus content this summer, as well as re-releasing some of our favorite episodes. Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any of our content this summer. And we will be having more fun on social media, because we won't be so busy editing episodes. So find us on socials this summer. We'll be talking all the shit and having all the fun and drinking some margaritas. And probably some High Times with the Most High.
I feel like High Times with the Most High is definitely going to happen in this Chili's tonight.
There will be content on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. So find us there. And we have an amazing Facebook group. So look us up, Holy Ghosting Pod, everywhere you want to hear from us. We'll be there this summer with new content. Bye, ghosties.
We love you, ghosties.
Holy Ghosting is a Same Team Media production. Music by Weep Bar. AP Weber produced the show. Thanks for joining us. And if you miss us in between shows, you can find us on socials, posting almost every day at Holy Ghosting Pod, Instagram, and TikTok.